Hey everybody, Steve here. We today are releasing a bonus episode of Thinking Sideways. It's our show that we call Down the Rabbit Hole. As some of you may know, we are on Stitcher Premium, and once a month on Stitcher Premium, we put out bonus content. And we wanted to share with you what that bonus content was, so you could know what you could get if you were to join Stitcher Premium. So what you're going to hear here is an episode that we released a couple of months back, and this is the kind of thing that you would get on a regular basis. So enjoy!
Thinking Sideways. Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
I don't understand. What?
Down the rabbit hole.
Thinking Sideways.
We'll seek questions.
Down the rabbit hole.
Thinking
Sideways. Hi there, welcome to a very special episode of Thinking Sideways. And by very special, we don't mean heartwarming. We mean murder.
Down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, exactly. We're going down the rabbit hole. Brought to you, of course, by Stitcher Premium, which you probably already know about since you're listening to us on Stitcher Premium. Okay. You guys ready to go?
We are.
Talk about this mystery? All right. I am Joe, by the way.
Brought to you by? You're brought to us by your mom.
Yeah. I know.
And your dad.
Your mother.
Yeah. Okay. I'm Joe, and those other two people, forget about them.
I'm Steve, as usual.
That's Steve. And who's
Devin,
that? Okay,
always.
Devin. Okay, good. Glad we got that straight.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about a mystery. And you guys are going to like this one. It involves the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a boat, which vanished mysteriously.
Okay.
Which is why you're doing it.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. And now, wait, if you're one of those people that's sick of the Bermuda Triangle thing, this is a little different. Would you guys not agree?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the boat, it's not one of those boats that sailed
this
off.
This is really on the fringe of the whole Bermuda Triangle.
Well, it's really on the tip of the triangle. And it actually, this boat vanished within sight of Miami Beach, Florida.
Hmm.
Within sight. And also just after communicating with the Coast Guard, like minutes after. And then the boat just has vanished. But let's start from the beginning. This happened 50 years ago on December 22nd, 1967. And the boat that disappeared was called the Witchcraft. And it was a 23-foot cabin cruiser owned by Daniel Barak, who was a real estate and hotel developer in Pennsylvania and I think also in Miami. He was fairly rich, had a house, a really nice house in a really nice neighborhood in Miami Beach, plus a few others in Pennsylvania. Aboard the boat with Dan Barak was a passenger, Father Patrick Horgan, also called Padre Horgan, who was a Catholic priest from Fort Lauderdale. Although originally he was from Ireland, he'd been naturalized like 10 months before.
Hmm.
So they were the only two passengers on the boat. Dan Barak invited Father Horgan to go out on his boat to see the Christmas lights of Miami.
That was nice of him.
From the water, you're right? Yeah, I know. Yeah. Sounds like a fun little outing. I don't know if they took beer or not. I assume they did. They left Dan Barak's home on Sunset Island. I should say Sunset Island number 4, Miami Beach. I know there's a little string of four islands there on the inside of the island that is Miami Beach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So number 1 is the most prime real estate?
I don't know about that.
It was just the first one.
They're just numbered 1 through 4 as you go north to south.
Got it.
You know, and actually, it's kind of nice, actually, that they didn't name them all different names, like Sunset Island and Treasure Island and, you know, Bunny Island. You know?
Stapler Island.
Yeah, exactly.
Stapler Island?
They were running out of names, okay?
Yeah,
there's a lot of islands down there.
I
kind of like that, the office products chain, you know, there's Stapler, there's Post-it Note.
Have you ever been in a town where you wondered where the hell they came up with the street names? It's the same problem. The guy is sitting, Paperclip. Lamp Road, Monitor Way.
I feel like usually it's just, I know, A, B, C, D, E, Ave.
That's well, the nice
way. They can only do 26 streets, and then they've got to find something else.
A, B. But, back to our story, though. I'll give you a quick overview of the geography of Miami Beach. Most of you probably know it, but for those who don't, we have the city of Miami, which is on the mainland, down near the south end of the peninsula of Florida. And then to the east of that, there's a big barrier island, and that island is Miami Beach. In between is Biscayne Bay. Dan Burek's home, as I said, was on a small island on the west side of Miami Beach. So Dan Burek and Father Horgan left the island in the boat and went west into Biscayne Bay, then turned south and motored about 2.5 miles south to what's called Government Cut, which is a channel between Miami Beach and Fisher Island to the south of Miami Beach. You guys, I'm sure, went and looked at the maps and stuff in the aerials.
Well, yeah, you sent it to us. We couldn't help but see it.
I know.
Yeah. It's almost impossible to.
Yeah, yeah, I sent you guys a nice nautical chart and everything that explained all this stuff. Yeah. So that was the Government Cut is a dredged out channel. It allows deep water ships and, of course, cruise ships to get in and out of the port of Miami. And it goes southeast about a mile out from Miami Beach, and then it jogs 45 degrees to the northeast. It's marked by a series of red and green buoys. So on the north side of the channel is the red buoys. On the south side is the green buoys. So
you know which way you're going.
Exactly. So it's very, very easy. On the south side of the channel, where it bends to the northeast, is buoy 7, where our mystery takes place. So that's where Dan Burek intended to take the witchcraft.
About a mile offshore.
Yeah, about a mile off from the southeast tip of Miami Beach. About a mile southeast of there.
Sorry, the witchcraft?
Yeah, the witchcraft. The name of the boat.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did we say that already?
Yeah.
And I just wasn't paying
attention? You just weren't paying
attention. Yeah, you were
I was reading ahead. Sorry.
You were texting or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, everyone.
No, that's okay. And apparently, they got there. So all was well until 9 p.m. when the Coast Guard got a radio message from Dan Burek saying his boat had hit an underwater object.
And it's pretty shallow in that area, so it's not weird that he would say he bumped into something.
Yeah, there are hazards there. I mean, there's tons and tons of pleasure boats, and if a boat sinks, and if it doesn't, you know, it could actually wind up being
My point is that it's not hundreds of feet deep.
No, exactly. I think the water right around buoy 7 is 24 to 25 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not deep at all. But anyway, he hit something, and it looks like the hull was not breached, apparently. He was calm and said there was no emergency. He just needed a tow. So we're all assuming. He didn't say exactly what was wrong, but I assume it damaged his screw or his rudder.
Mm-hmm.
Or something
he was
like
screwed.
That. Yeah, he was screwed. He was screwed, probably. So he needed a tow back to shore. He said he was by buoy 7. And like I said, according to the Coast Guard, and I have no idea, I assume they taped the conversation, but maybe not. But they said he was totally calm about the whole thing. And he also said that he would shoot off a flare to make it easier to find him. But for some reason, he didn't shoot off that flare.
Hmm.
We don't know why. But the Coast Guard had no problem finding buoy 7 anyway because
they know where it is.
Oh, they know exactly where it is, so no problem. They headed right over there. But when they got to buoy 7, the witchcraft was nowhere to be seen. And again, this wasn't hours or days later. This was 19 minutes after they got the radio call. I assume they already had boats on the water, which
I'm sure
they did. So they were right over there. 19 minutes, and they went all around. Of course, it was dark, but they have powerful searchlights on their boats and stuff. And so
it's what they do.
Yeah.
They search for stuff.
Oh, yeah. So they scanned all around looking for signs of the boat, maybe the passengers and life jackets bobbing in the water, all that stuff. They searched pretty thoroughly that night. They found nothing at all, not even a little piece of garbage.
No
debris or anything.
No flotsam at all, not even a seat cushion. And, of course, Dan Burek could not be raised on the radio either. They kept looking, and the search actually went on for a little over a week. And
so they didn't just say, oh, prank call.
Yeah, they didn't just say, you know, oh, well, let's go. They hung out.
They actually did search.
They searched the rest of the...
They're not like your Lyft driver who says, that guy's not here, I'm going to leave.
Yeah, not like that at all. They kept searching and searching and searching, and eventually they had Coast Guard ships and Navy, U.S. Navy ships involved in this search, and also, like, I think about 6 planes flying over the ocean looking. And which, again, is close to Miami is very helpful because even if the boat sank, you'd still see it underwater.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that deep.
Oh, the water's pretty clear.
And it's clear. Yeah. It's very clear. Actually, if you get on Google the aerial and go out from Miami Beach to buoy 7 and then continue southeast another mile or so, mile and a half, there's this weird little spot where there's about 8, 9, 10 boats sunk. You can see them underwater there. There's this little cluster of them. And I don't know what it is, if they're derelict boats and the Coast Guard finds them and then just...
Makes them into habitat or something
for fish. Just tow them over there to that spot. Maybe they're trying to build an artificial reef or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But
you can actually see it from satellite images.
Oh, yeah. You can see them underwater.
Which is pretty significant.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing, though, is that it shouldn't have sunk because Dan Burek, apparently, according to friends, was very safety conscious.
And I guess terrified.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but he was prepared, and he had actually had the boat fitted with extra flotation. I don't know if that's styrofoam or what, but he had extra flotation in that boat. So the boat, even if it had completely swamped and filled with water, it still should have floated.
At least it shouldn't have sunk in 19 minutes.
Yeah, no, right? Definitely it would have sunk a lot slower, but it would have never completely
submerged.
Yeah, there'd be part of it sticking out of the water.
Right.
Yeah, and a big enough part for, I assume, the two passengers to cling to, and wave at the Coast Guard.
Yeah, or for the Coast Guard to see.
Yeah.
Even.
Exactly.
Even if they did perish, unfortunately.
Yeah, at least they would have seen the boat, right?
Yeah.
So I could imagine they're clinging to the boat, and suddenly, you know, a bunch of clever sharks just pop up out of the water and snap them off there, carry them away, you know.
It's the prequel to Sharknado.
Yeah.
Anyway, the search went on. They went as much as 30 miles out to sea, and they went all up and down the coastline from there on the theory that maybe they were caught in a current or something like that. They notified every private boat to be on the alert for this boat as far out as, say, Bimini and everywhere else. And so private owners were looking for the boat, too. And not a sign of the boat was ever seen.
Wow.
I know.
Weird.
So there's a weird little mystery for you.
Super weird.
Yeah.
So what's the deal?
Well, we got some theories here, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, there are.
Really? We never do that.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do it now. This is a special episode. I said, a very special episode. Yeah.
Very special.
Theory number one. Of course, our favorite, the triangle. That is the Bermuda Triangle. Triangle got them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, typically...
Well, triangles are pointy and dangerous, and of course it stabbed the boat.
Yeah, they ran right into the corner of it.
Is it a corner on a triangle? I don't think it is.
Yeah.
Is it a corner
or an apex or what?
I think it's an apex. I don't think it's a corner on a triangle.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Doesn't really
matter. I have nothing to contribute to this conversation.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just sitting,
like
waiting.
I was crazy.
No, I'm just waiting for this to be over. I have nothing to contribute.
Yeah, no, that'll be fodder for another episode.
Great.
Yeah. Our mystery this week. What do they call the pointy things on triangles?
Yeah.
Pointy things.
Yeah, they call them pointy things.
Yeah.
Okay, but back to our triangle theory. Well, it's not, you know, obviously that is the go-to theory for a lot of people when it comes to this story. But if they really, truly were at buoy 7 and dead in the water, then where the hell did that boat go?
If
it wasn't the triangle,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, that's when things like space-time portals start making sense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course I found theories about their Bermuda Triangle about this case on the web, which lends more credence to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I really love about the Bermuda Triangle?
Yeah.
It is anywhere you want it to be in that region of the ocean.
Yeah, definitely. I think
it always shifts around.
It.
There is no official area that is.
There is an official.
No,
area.
It's always moving. It's everybody describes it in a slightly different area to fit the disappearances that they need that might be on the on the periphery.
It gets drawn a little differently, but also you see that, say, like I said, boat X disappeared in this location, and it's not actually in the traditional Bermuda Triangle. As long as it's sort of close enough,
it's in the Bermuda rhombus.
Yeah.
Well, you know the trick with supernatural and paranormal whatever we're gonna call the Bermuda Triangle that it's not usually as though it is going to just stay 100% within the confines of.
Well, that's true.
Which is just, it needs to cooperate.
Yeah, geez, stay in the lines, man.
I'll let you talk to them, Steve. I'm not going to talk to that triangle, no way.
All right.
Yeah, they scare me.
So
it scares me.
It might be, but we couldn't ever prove one way or another.
Not really. I mean, the only thing that would prove it is if they suddenly pop back into existence in that same spot, like, say, tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then I would say we've got to give the triangle a little bit of credence.
Sure.
Then. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so we'll see if that happens.
Yeah.
So let's move on to our next theory, which is the boat just sank. And again, this is like, you know, I'm not going to give it more than 30 seconds here, because if it went down...
there should have been a bunch of junk floating around.
There should have been stuff floating around. It should be visible just 24, 25 feet down. Of course, another possibility is it sank, it drifted a little bit north and sank in the channel, which is, I think, about 45 feet deep.
But still...
Don't they dredge that thing on a regular basis?
Yeah, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers actually dredges it, so they would have scraped it up. They should have found something by this time.
Yeah.
It's been 50 years.
Yeah they definitely should have, right? And even if they didn't, you would think you would still be able to see it. That's not that deep still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it still isn't tremendously deep, But maybe 45 feet would be enough to make it invisible. I don't know.
But again, with all the stuff that was, you know, flotation devices and all the other,
beer
floatsome?
Cans.
Yeah.
Flotsam?
No, I like floatsome.
Floatsam?
Yeah.
It floats them along?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You would expect to see something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's always a possibility, of course, that it sank and it sank deep enough and it's drifted off, but it still hadn't hit bottom yet. So it's still slowly sinking, but it drifts miles away and sinks.
But
I still think we would have stumbled across it at some point.
And that's a really, really quick time for a boat to sink.
Uh-huh. It is.
Especially one that was as floaty as this one, right?
Yeah. Now, again, if the damage to the hull had been so catastrophic that the water was just gushing in, I would think he would have mentioned that.
I think he would have.
Radio message.
He would have said, actually, it is an emergency.
He would have said, yeah, we're going down.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't say that. I think he specifically said, this is not an emergency. I think
won't be able to move.
I think he just wanted to let those guys know, eventually I'm going to need a tow, but if there's somebody dying out there, don't ignore them to come over and visit me, because it's not an emergency. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was definitely, I don't think the hull was breached.
Yeah.
But there's another theory out there. Apparently, there was a small storm, like a squall, I guess, that blew in that night and could have actually pushed them out to sea and into the Gulf Stream. They could have been carried away. I don't think it came. I just don't know precisely when it came in. And frankly, in another account that I read of this, the storm did not actually hit until the next day.
Well, furthermore, if the Coast Guard was only 19 minutes away.
Yeah, they would have noticed.
They would have probably noticed there was a storm happening, right?
Oh, they would have noticed. And also, of course, by the way, you know, just because there's a storm doesn't mean your radio stops working.
Yeah.
And if there had been a storm that night, it seems pretty unlikely that somebody would go out to look at the Christmas lights from the water, because the storm would be making it hard to see.
Yeah. Though, in fairness, as we've seen in Portland today,
storms blowing
2 hours ago, it was beautiful, and now it's gale winds and pouring rain.
Yeah, and actually, at any coast, it's so much more changeable, so much more quickly.
It is.
Yeah.
Miami is a pretty nice spot, even during this time of year. Well, it's just, you know, it's nicer, it's more tropical. But I just maintain that if the Coast Guard arrived and saw, oh, there's a big old storm blowing through here, they would have probably... You know, storms don't usually, 19 minutes would be pretty dang quick for a storm to have just blown through.
Yeah, it really would be. And you'd think they would take note of that, too. It's like, okay, we got this storm, strong winds are blowing from the southwest to the northeast. Hey, why don't we go look to the northeast?
Yeah.
They're not that stupid. The Coast Guard actually knows this.
They do actually know what's going on.
They know this stuff, yeah. So, okay, let's table that theory. I don't like the storm idea. But here's another one that's maybe possible. Which is, I mean, they were at Buoy 7 right next to a shipping lane. So if their boat's dead in the water, maybe they drifted a little bit to the north into the channel. Freighter comes along or some large ship and just tags them and basically drags him out to sea.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's snagged on it in some way.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, it's conceivable they wind up just sort of speared on the bow of a ship and just off they go.
You might know this. You might not know this.
Probably don't.
Don't you think that you would notice if you ran into a boat on a ship?
You know, actually, there have been instances where large freighters and tankers and stuff have gotten into port, and then only after they got into port they realized they've got like a small sailboat, like, you know, on their bow.
Okay.
I mean, it does happen.
And we've talked about this before. There's also unscrupulous people who don't want to admit that they just ran somebody over and whatever litigation might come about.
Yeah.
So they just keep going, knowing that it'll fall off between the port they're leaving and the port they're destined to hit.
Yeah.
It's probably going to come loose.
Yeah, and if it doesn't, you can always stop and send some crew members down there to knock it loose.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, this is a very busy area, especially around Christmas time. It's like, you've seen what the river down here gets like at Christmas when they have the Christmas boats out and stuff.
Yeah, there's people everywhere.
And there's people.
They're all over the place
and
in the way.
And same way down in Miami. Apparently, there were a ton of boats out that night on the water looking at the Christmas lights and stuff. In a situation like that, you'd think that any responsible ship owner or ship driver would have at least one crew member stationed on the bow looking for stuff.
Right. Theoretically, yeah.
Theoretically, right.
Yeah.
And, of course, Dan Burak had a flare gun. He said he had a flare gun, although he never shot off a flare, so maybe he turns out his flare gun was out of flares. Maybe, I don't know.
Or a dud.
Or duds or something.
Never buy a discounted flare gun.
Yeah.
You discounted for a reason.
Seems like if he was so safety conscious that he had extra padding in his boat to make sure that it would never sink, uh-huh. he would make sure he had flares.
Probably spare flares and, yeah. and stuff like that. You would think he would. Yeah. So this one doesn't work. Let's pop it out and put a new one in. I'm sure he had extra ones.
You would think.
So, I mean, and obviously, if he's that safety conscious, he might have had a couple of paddles in there, too. So they're drifting into the shipping lane. So, okay, get out the paddles from Padre and let's start paddling real fast before that boat gets over here.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, I'm not...
Also, a radio.
And also,
he had a working radio. If you
radio,
saw a
yeah,
ship coming right at you, you could get on the radio and just be like, wait.
Yeah, it's like, hold
no,
on
wait.
There.
Or
yeah.
even just back to the Coast Guard and say, actually, it's an emergency now. There's a ship coming at me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and he didn't do that. And also, I mean, even if he had been carried away, you would think that some wreckage would have been left behind, don't you think?
I mean, yeah, something, I do.
Something would have been left behind. So even though this is actually a plausible theory in some ways, it doesn't really entirely fit the bill for me.
So what's next?
So our next theory is they radioed in from thinking they were at buoy 7, but they were maybe at buoy 9 or buoy 13. You know, maybe they were mistaken. Although the problem with this theory, of course, is
they still should have been found in the search.
They should have turned up sooner or later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a massive search.
Yeah. But along those lines, our next theory is that they faked it and they disappeared to start a new life. Because, I mean, after all, they said they were at buoy 7. How do we know they actually were?
Well,
maybe not.
Yes, but it would have been just as easy for them to just motor on out
and not even bother,
and not
to, make
even bother to make a call.
Well, it actually would have made a lot more sense to motor or at least pretend to motor way out to sea.
Mm-hmm.
Like say, oh yeah, we're gonna like go to what's near Bermuda,
Havana.
Yeah, I think Bermuda's
the Bahamas.
The Bahamas are right there. Yeah, I'm confusing.
Oh no,
confused.
They definitely are.
Yeah. So the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. So you could say like, yeah, we're gonna motor over to the Bahamas for Christmas, and then you say, oh, you radio in from like halfway in between, and say, oh my God, boat's out of control. Catching fire or something. You know?
It's only like 70 miles.
It's not that far.
It's so close. But,
it is. Yeah.
But again, radioing in doesn't make any sense if your intention is to just flat out disappear.
Well, yeah. I mean, radioing in could be something like as a way of giving people.
It's a red herring, but it's everything is so close there, and they can tell kind of where your signal is coming from. So to a degree, you can't lie and say you're 100 miles north when you're 100 miles south, because they're gonna be like, that's strange, because we picked you up on the southern end.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be easier just to keep your trap shut and go wherever the hell you were gonna go, and people would just presume that you sank.
Yeah. Or I mean, I don't even know if they told. I assume they told people that they were going out.
Yeah, I think so, but I don't know.
If you were really just trying to disappear, why wouldn't you just quietly get on your boat and drive away? I mean...
Yeah,
get on your bike and ride, yeah.
Yeah, I assume that there were people at the house when they left, because otherwise, how do we know that Father Horgan was on the boat?
Yeah.
Because I don't think he called the Coast Guard and says, hey, I'm out here with a Catholic priest, my buoy 7.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what happened, right? And
right.
So I think that there were people who saw them leave and maybe bade them farewell.
I mean, I don't know. This makes the most sense of all the theories so far to me, to be honest.
Starting a new life?
Yeah. Though I agree, if it were me, I wouldn't like call in and I'd just motor on out of there, but...
Yeah, but it does make a certain amount of sense. The only hitch with this theory is that why do two guys need to leave and start new lives at the same time? That's a weird thing.
Well, it's not.
Unless they were like gay or something.
I mean, they could have been lovers.
Yeah.
Especially 50 years ago, and one of them being a Catholic priest. Like, if they were lovers, they needed to leave.
They did need to leave town, yeah.
You know?
So that's entirely plausible. I mean, Burak was fairly rich. Maybe he just cashed out and they took a suitcase of cash onto the boat with them and vanished and went to live in Mexico or Bolivia or Portugal or somewhere.
Sounds great to me.
Yeah, that doesn't sound so bad.
No.
Yeah, here we go. Problem solved. Answered.
Yeah.
Answered.
There you go.
Solved.
Okay, so we're going to give that one up. There's a few more theories. Well, one more.
I thought we had solved it.
No, not quite. Well, another theory is foul play.
Okay.
Yeah, which could have been. There's a blogger out there named Michelle Merritt who put up an interesting post about this several years ago. And she's got some theories about foul play, which I thought I would like bring to our listeners and share with everybody. She said that she noted a few interesting facts about crime in Miami Beach at that time. As you obviously all know, then and now, it is home to a lot of very rich people, which, you know, might attract your criminal types also, right? And so there were some home invasions, robberies that took place. Like there was one big famous one that took place like 2 months before this incident.
Hmm.
Another one took place like a month after this incident.
Hmm.
So her thinking was possibly it was something on the order of, well, maybe some criminals came busting in and then took them hostage and then for some reason decided to make their getaway in the boat, you know? That particular one doesn't totally make sense.
Particularly because we just said we think there were people at the house when they left, right?
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. And so, this one is like, but there's other variations on that, which is like, you know, for example, he was involved in the hotel business in Miami. Maybe he was involved with some shady people.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he, you know, for whatever reason, you know, made the wrong people angry. And so they got rid of him. They mm-hmm. took him. And maybe Father Horgan was just collateral damage and they just took them out to sea and mm-hmm. sank the boat or whatever.
Could have been a crime of opportunity. You know, yeah. Somebody comes along and sees a disabled boat.
Uh-huh.
Notices, oh, that's that rich guy that I know about.
Uh-huh.
Offers them a tow. That's why he doesn't set off the flare.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. then actually just kidnaps them and scuttles the boat or mm-hmm. whatever else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's possible. Well, you'd think he would have radioed the Coast Guard and said, never mind. But
you would think.
You would think.
Unless he was already dead on the deck.
Or yeah, the people who kidnapped him were like, oh, no, we'll radio them. We'll let them
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm. That could be like a combination of theories. Maybe he and the father were heading off to start their new life with a suitcase full of cash. And these guys. And so, in this scenario, maybe the Good Samaritans are on board helping them rig for the tow. And then
the not-so-good Samaritans.
Yeah, well, they're Good Samaritans for now. But then suddenly the suitcase with cash pops open and, you know, revealing that there's cash.
Cash and diamonds just flowing everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. So our Good Samaritan immediately spins around with a belaying pin and brains them both and shoves their bodies overboard.
Yeah.
And then, you know, or maybe probably took their bodies way out to sea and shoved them
Yeah, I was
going to
say, because seems yeah. like the bodies would have shown up too.
Uh-huh.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Or back to our home invasion theory, I mean, it might be that maybe the word was out that, okay, Dan Burak, super rich guy, has a secret safe in his house that he's got $3 million in cash in. And so because there were no signs of a home invasion in the house itself, as far as I know. But supposing somebody forces his way into the house and just forces him to open the safe, take out the cash, and then make his getaway on the boat. And so that would make sense. Okay, so, it doesn't totally make sense to do the whole Buoy 7, you know, radio signal thing.
But you don't know that it was actually him that made the call. It could have been somebody impersonating him.
It could have been.
Your idea that they're farther out to sea than they really are becomes plausible. I mean, this one is just a hamster wheel.
It is.
You can go round and round.
You mean a rabbit hole?
Something like that.
Yeah. It's a hamsters too. Hamsters are totally allowed. Of course, we don't discriminate, but yeah. it's kind of a rabbit-oriented podcast.
Small furry animals.
Yeah.
Small tails.
I know.
Some little rodents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I still kind of like, I tend to like that they ran away together just because it's a happier ending.
Yeah, it is a happier ending. But yeah, there's so many permutations on this whole thing. Another variation on it is that somebody in the family, say maybe for insurance purposes or inheritance purposes, wanted to get rid of him. But again, who knows? There's no evidence for any of this stuff, unfortunately.
There's just no evidence.
There just ain't no evidence. But it's a really intriguing little story,
yeah.
I'll say.
I
agree with you. I like the idea that they just decided to, like, you know, and maybe they weren't even gay. They just thought, you know, let's go to Bolivia and be Butch Cassidy and Sundance.
Yeah.
You know, it could have been something like that, too.
Yeah.
Who knows? You know, they were bored with Miami.
Yeah.
All right, so that's our story. But if you have any theories, you know our email. We're taking off. I want to say a special thank you to all of our Stitcher Premium listeners. You guys are awesome. And we'll see you next time.
All right, bye.
Bye, guys.
So long, rabbit.
Hey everybody, Steve here one last time. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to get more of this kind of bonus content that's available through Stitcher Premium, just go to stitcher.com/thinkingsideways and use the promo code Sideways and you'll get 1 month free when you sign up for the annual plan. You'll also, of course, get access to all the other shows that are on Stitcher as premium content, and you get us 4 days earlier, and you get us without ads. So if you want to take advantage of that, go to that link, sign up with that code, and enjoy, and we'll talk to you guys on Thursday.